Hey everyone, welcome back to AI Unchained, the podcast where we delve deep into the world of AI, Web 3.0, and the latest tech innovations. I'm Jack, and joining me as always is my brilliant co-host, C-O-R-R.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be here with all of you. We've got a jam-packed episode today, covering everything from the newest breakthroughs in artificial intelligence to the wild world of Web 3.0.
That's right, Core. We'll also be diving into some hot-button topics in business and political arenas that have tech ties. So, whether you're a tech enthusiast or just curious about what's shaping our digital future, you're in the right place.
And let's not forget, we'll spice things up with some good old debates and a sprinkle of humor. We're here to educate, but also to entertain. So grab your snacks, coffee, or whatever keeps you going, because we're about to take off on this tech-fueled journey.
Absolutely. Speaking of snacks, Core, did you hear about that new AI-powered vending machine that's making waves in Silicon Valley?
Oh, you mean the one that supposedly has a sixth sense for your cravings? I have some thoughts on that, and not all of them are positive.
Well, before we get into a vending machine debate, let's set the stage for today's episode. We'll start with the latest AI developments that promise to revolutionize industries. Then we'll pivot to Web 3.0, exploring how blockchain technology is transforming not only finance, but also sectors like healthcare and entertainment.
And we can't forget about those juicy business and political stories either. From tech CEOs taking public stances on social issues to new legislation that could impact the innovation landscape, there's a lot to unpack.
So stick around, folks. There's a ton to discuss and plenty of ground to cover. Ready, Core?
Always ready, Jack. Let's get this show on the road.
All right, here we go. All right, so continuing our chat about cryptography and privacy tech, what's striking is that you guys aren't just slapping legal contracts onto the problem. You're actually digging into the hardware and cryptography for real security solutions. So Tanya, why was that so important for you and your team?
Yeah, Tanya, I'm curious too. It sounds like you came from a pretty diverse and high-powered background. How did that all come together? And why couldn't a pinky promise or some PII reduction just cut it?
That makes sense. I mean, putting a Band-Aid over a wound doesn't heal it, just hides it. And those legal contracts are just not sufficient, right?
Totally, Jack. The legal contracts are basically like asking someone to pretty please not to breach security. So, Tanya, what's the real deal with this verifiability you're talking about?
You've got a link for verification processes, right? But it's borderline impossible to understand unless you're deep in the field. How does that play into making this comprehensible for an everyday user?
That's such a critical step. Making sure regular folks can understand and use these verification tools is crucial. But let's circle back to this idea of hardware playing a role. Why is trusted hardware so pivotal in the equation?
So, looking at the recent Coinbase scenario, they had an email breach where private customer data was exposed. How does your approach prevent something like that from happening?
Speaking of layers, let's not forget AI personal assistants we mentioned earlier. PII reduction doesn't work great for them, right? An AI assistant would be pretty useless if it can't remember essential personal details about you. So how can AI, privacy, and security harmoniously exist together in your view?
That's like cloak and dagger stuff. You can work on the data without actually ever seeing it. But what do you say to skeptics? Can you really be both private and functional in AI?
Love the proactive approach. Real quick, before we wrap, thoughts on the Coinbase's news of joining the S&P 500 and their ambitious plans to become the number one financial services app?
It's been fantastic diving deep. We'll be keeping an eye on how these security techs evolve and whether Coinbase and others embrace these hardware-backed solutions. Thanks, Tanya.
Yep. Big thanks to you, Tanya. Gotta say, it's been an enlightening discussion. Hard to believe we still have so much to cover next. Until then.
So, Core, you mentioned you've been working on this fascinating AI programming assistant called Sketch for the last few months. You were surprised by how simple the main loop of using a large language model, or LLM, with tool use was. Let's dive into that. What exactly makes it so surprisingly simple?
Yeah, Jack, it's pretty wild. You'd expect that integrating an AI model with all sorts of programming tools would be super complex, but once you've set up the LLM, the main loop is basically just take input, process it through the LLM, and then output the result. It's more about managing the context and ensuring the AI has the right data to work with.
That does sound deceptively easy. So it's like feeding a machine with a question and it spits out an answer without a lot of middle managing in between?
Exactly. You still need to fine-tune and train the model with relevant data, but the process flow remains straightforward. One interesting thing is working with up-to-date documentation. AI models often have a knowledge cutoff, meaning they don't know about changes made after their last training session. That's where tools like LLMS.txt come in handy.
Right, LLMS.txt files. Wait, aren't these like cheat sheets for the AI containing up-to-date library information formatted specifically for the AI to digest quickly?
Yep, you got it. More so, there's this push towards creating super condensed, highly structured summaries, LLM, min.txt files that strip away all the fluff and just give AIs the raw, essential information they need. Think of stripping JavaScript files down to min.js. It's more efficient for the AI to process, saving on computational power and time.
Efficient use of resources always sounds good in theory, but what about in practice? Are these min text files as effective as they sound?
Definitely effective. They reduce the documentation size by up to 90 to 95%, which is huge. Take the example of a library like NumPy for Python, which is a mammoth. Distilling it while keeping vital snippets intact means the AI can load and reference the entire thing within its context window.
That makes sense. It's like giving an actor only their lines in a play, so they don't have to wade through the entire script every time they perform.
Nicely put. And using something like Google's Gemini AI model is key in all this. By leveraging these models, we ensure the AI processes these condensed files accurately and quickly.
So we're seeing more companies embracing these innovations. Look at something like Tinfoil, hosting models while guaranteeing zero data access. They're basically saying you can run AI workloads in the cloud without worrying about your private data being stored or accessed by others. That's huge for privacy.
Yeah, Tinfoil is banking on the idea that securing AI workloads in the cloud will unlock incredible new applications, similar to what TLS did for secure internet transactions. I mean, think about analyzing sensitive documents or building proprietary code copilots without the risk of privacy breaches. It's game-changing.
I imagine security must be a nightmare otherwise. Before Tinfoil and similar solutions, developers would have to resort to keeping sensitive computations local, which isn't scalable. With NVIDIA's confidential computing capabilities and their latest GPUs, they've taken a major step forward.
Absolutely. This opens up so many possibilities. For instance, Llama or DeepSeek R1 models can run securely on cloud GPUs now. People don't have to worry about privacy risks that traditionally blocked the use of cloud AI.
Segueing into other emerging technologies, I saw something about a new service called Context 7. They provide up-to-date contextual information to AIs by summarizing documentation on the fly. Is this something Sketch could integrate with as well?
For sure. Integrating dynamic services like Context 7 would mean Sketch remains current without retraining the core model frequently. Imagine the efficiency of an AI assistant that not only knows but anticipates changes in the programming landscape as they happen.
So it seems the trend is towards dynamic, real-time adjustments with minimal burden on the user, sort of like having an always-on, continuously learning partner. By the way, have you looked into the LSP server for TLA Plus proof language in VS Code?
Yeah, that's an exciting addition. It's written in OCaml to top the TLFVM parser, enhancing support in VS Code. For those using TLA Plus, it parses and proofs the code effectively, reducing the time and effort needed to manually check correctness in complex software systems.
OCaml, that's an interesting choice. That's where Tanya, Sasha, Jules, and Nate from Tinfoil play a big role too. They're all about ensuring the data managed or processed through their models remains secure and private. The future of AI can only truly thrive if data privacy concerns are consistently addressed.
We're definitely heading down an exciting path in AI development, and adopting these innovative frameworks and services makes for a more robust, future-proof programming environment.
Couldn't agree more. And for our listeners who think this is all over their heads, remember, AI is like a toddler now. We're just teaching it to walk and speak. Soon, it'll be running marathons and giving speeches. Exciting time.
Perfect analogy, Jack. We often forget that every great tool we have today started out as a simple prototype. Here's to the future of AI tools, making our lives easier, one innovation at a time.
So let's dive back into this whole C++ initialization thing. It's fascinating, but also frustrating because it feels like a minefield. The problem starts right at the point of defining constructors and how we initialize our variables, doesn't it?
Absolutely, Jack. It's almost like C++ wants to keep you on your toes. You think you're writing responsible code only to realize that one minor difference, like where you choose to default your constructor, can cause undefined behavior. It's like the trick cigar in old cartoons. On the surface, everything looks fine, but then boom.
Haha, that's the perfect analogy. Now, let's talk a bit about these user-provided constructors. Technically, if you declare a constructor as default directly at its first declaration, it's not considered user-provided, right?
That's right. But if you default it later, somewhere else, congratulations, you've made it user-provided. The crazy part is that by doing this, you could end up skipping zero initialization for some variables, like the example we gave with a.a being zero and b.b being indeterminate. And then you try to read b.b, and there goes your program, summoning nasal demons or whatever undefined behavior we like to joke about.
It's like playing Minesweeper with your code base. One wrong move, and you're metaphorically blowing up your afternoon debugging session. The subtlety is just insane. It's why I keep telling newbies, always be explicit with your initializations. It saves so many headaches.
100%. And you know this whole thing about the translation unit not having access to the constructor definition, so it can't optimize or know for sure if it's some heavy operation, like sending a telegram to the moon.
I was waiting for that. Seriously though, it all boils down to making your intentions clear to the compiler. When in doubt, just spell things out. Speaking of spelling things out, let's talk about legacy code. This is where things get really fun, or not.
Oh man, legacy code. To me, there is nothing spookier than inheriting a code base where you have no idea what mystical incantations went into some of those functions. Like you said, it's code, not in living knowledge.
Exactly. I mean, you've got your definitions, interactions, usage patterns, and pristine new code, but in legacy code, you're sometimes reduced to code archaeology, digging through without knowing if you're going to find treasure or a pitfall.
Often it's the latter, haha. But honestly, this distinction about user-provided versus defaulted constructors plays a huge role in these old code bases. A lot of people didn't know, or perhaps didn't care for, the subtleties leading to these maintenance nightmares we've all come to fear.
Yeah, and let's not even start on the undefined behaviors. It's like that monster under the bed. Most of the time it's not there, but once in a while it jumps out and suddenly you're debugging something that's eating your cat or ordering random pizzas.
And the cryptic error messages are the best, or the worst. They really test your sanity. Debugging legacy code can feel like solving riddles from the Sphinx. Sometimes you just have to change how you tell the compiler to generate code because whoever wrote it years ago didn't think about the impact of an explicitly defaulted function.
Which actually brings me to an important point. We all should be writing tests for our code, especially in C++. It's like leaving a map for the people who come after us. Without tests, the code might as well be hieroglyphics.
Legacy code without tests is the ultimate horror story. It's like, good luck, new guy. Here's a totally uncharted territory. Oh, and don't forget to wear this miner's helmet while you're at it.
Haha, exactly. Before we switch gears, let's remind our listeners to revisit their C++ projects and be very, very careful with initializations and constructor declarations. Their future selves and possibly their teammates will thank them.
Amen to that. And remember, folks, if you're dealing with that legacy code, consider adding tests to make it easier for the next developer. They'll appreciate it as much as you appreciate a flashlight in a dark room.
So, Core, diving into this whole thing on initialization and writing unsurprising code, it sounds like over-optimization can sometimes cause more trouble than it's worth. Have you ever run into that in your own projects?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen developers go wild with trying to optimize every little thing. They spend hours tweaking the initialization process only to save, what, a few milliseconds per run? In the end, it often leads to more complex and error-prone code. Sometimes it's better to just leave things simple and clear. You've got to ask yourself, is that performance gain really worth the potential headaches?
Right, and it's all about prioritizing. Like, instead of going down the rabbit hole with optimizations, maybe focus on making your code easier to understand and maintain. Speaking of which, The talk about standardized testing for TLA parsers is fascinating. Imagine if every new TLA developer could just run these tests and instantly see what needs fixing.
It definitely beats sifting through tons of inscrutable lines of code, right?
Exactly. Those standardized tests are a game changer. Think about it. If you've got a new piece of code, you can write a test for it, run it through the parser, and see expected output straight away, you know, before debugging involved guesswork. Now you write a test, hit run, and track it in the debugger. It's a more reliable way to ensure that your parsers behave as expected.
And that onboarding syllabus you mentioned? Treating the code base like a study artifact so new contributors know exactly what to focus on? That's genius. It's like a treasure map for developers. They don't just get thrown into the chaos, but have a clear guide on where to start and what to do.
Absolutely. It's all about making the transition smoother for new developers. Imagine joining a project and having a syllabus ready that guides you through the code base step by step. Plus, having monthly updates and pointers to good first issues really helps in not overwhelming the newbies. You're easing them into the deep end without throwing them overboard.
Plus, it helps with smoothing over the constant flux of developers coming and going in FOSS projects. Speaking of which, the bit about grants and stipends is crucial. We've got a lot of brilliant minds, but they need to eat, right? And it's tough to sustain a full-time commitment without some financial backing.
Definitely. And that's why foundations like the TLA Foundation play such a pivotal role. They provide the necessary funds to keep development going. Without that support, a lot of these projects would just fizzle out because people can't afford to put in the time. And it opens up opportunities for more folks to contribute without worrying about making ends meet.
Speaking of support structures, let's touch base on that Coinbase incident a bit. Sensitive data breaches are scary, even if private keys weren't compromised. I mean, personal details being leaked hacks that user trust. Do you think it's enough just to dodge the ransom, or should companies be doing something more preventive?
That's a good point. While not paying the ransom and cooperating with law enforcement is a start, companies need to be proactive about their security measures. It's like locking your door, but leaving the windows open. We need a more holistic approach to data security. That means stronger encryption, regular security audits, employee training, and constant vigilance.
Totally. And then we see companies like Apple responding to EU's new laws under the Digital Markets Act with those justifications for their own payment systems, putting those big red exclamation marks on apps that use external payment mechanisms. Some might call that sneaky, maybe even a little retaliatory, but can't say it's not strategic.
Right. It's definitely a chess move from Apple. They're probably trying to maintain control over their ecosystem while legally complying with the DMA. That red alert could influence users' choices subtly, giving them second thoughts about using anything outside of Apple system. It's a way to hedge against the revenue loss from these external payments.
Yeah, it's all part of the platform wars, isn't it? They're appealing the decision over here, fighting it over there. It's a marathon strategy. Speaking of which, looking at this whole digital services marketplace, Tesla's aggressive market tactics, Acorn's integrating early bird, it's like a constant flux of evolution. We need more synergy between old and new market players and technology tools.
Absolutely. It's about creating ecosystems that are not just surviving, but thriving. Merging financial education tools like Early Bird with a broader platform like Acorns makes sense. It's the kind of strategic partnership that's likely to lead to real innovation for the end users, especially when it leads to features like digital time capsules. It turns saving and investing into a much more engaging and personal experience for families.
Circling back to that, it really ties into what we were discussing with FOSS and grants. The need for long-term support and vision in both spheres is striking. You can't just slap things together and hope they work. There needs to be a blend of sustainability and innovation.
Couldn't agree more. It's a balancing act of maintaining what's there, improving it, and always looking to what's next. Everyone's trying to manage the fundamental contradictions within these spaces. It's a long road, but with the right mix of tools, financial backing, and strategic forward thinking, it's certainly a promising one.
And as always, it's our job to keep an eye on these developments, provide the insights, and connect the dots. Speaking of connecting the dots, I think our next topic is... Well, that wraps up another fascinating episode of AI Unchained. Today, we covered a lot of ground, from the latest advancements in artificial intelligence to the unexpected twists in the business world and those heated political debates that keep us all on our toes.
Absolutely, Jack. I particularly enjoyed our deep dive into AI's role in healthcare innovation. It's incredible to see how machine learning is transforming patient outcomes and cutting down diagnosis times. Plus, who could forget our lively debate on the latest stock market trends?
Oh, for sure. You were really on fire with that one. And our discussion on regulatory changes impacting tech companies was definitely eye-opening. It's always good to see our industries being held accountable and finding that perfect balance.
Agreed. And let's not forget our little detour into the future of space travel and whether Elon Musk is secretly planning a colony on Mars. Always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, we went off the rails a bit with that one. But that's why we love it. Keeps things interesting. And thank you to our fantastic audience for sticking with us and contributing to the conversation.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. Your feedback and engagement are what make this show so special. We love hearing your thoughts and answering your questions live.
And on that note, thank you all for joining us today on AI Unchained. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some valuable insights.
Keep those questions coming, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. Your support means the world to us.
Yes. See you next time. We're already brewing up some exciting topics for the next episode, so you won't want to miss it.
Until then, stay curious, stay informed, and as always, stay unchained.